Good afternoon, everybody. It's the RSP Fantasy Film and Data. I am Dwayne McFarlane, and joined as always, I have Jay Moyer here. Jay, how you doing?
Dwayne, I am, as always, very excited to be here to talk some football. You know, Dwayne is the busiest man in fantasy football at this point with the various outlets he's providing content for. So it's always a great time to get on the pod and talk some football with him. Really excited to hear some of the insights he's had, you know, now that we have 5 weeks of football in our belts and really can make some good conclusions about where things are headed this season.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we have several good teams, you know, that we'll break down for folks today, Jay. I think folks have a lot of questions around these teams. So we'll talk about the Ravens, then we'll get into the Rams and what's going on there. And then we'll finish up with the Falcons. And then, you know, we'll just run through some guys that maybe are surprising so far as far as their fantasy rank. And then you and I will talk through a little bit about, you know, do we see them continuing, you know, to have that success? And then maybe we'll talk about a couple of guys that maybe they're not living up to expectations so far. And, you know, is there hope? So let's jump in right now. Let's talk a little bit about the Ravens. Jay, I know this is a team that you and I have talked about multiple times. We're both pretty infatuated with the Ravens and what they have going on. But the latest trend that we're seeing here is, you know, with Lamar Jackson, we've gone from 324 to 272 to 267 to 247 to 161 yards passing. So we're on a, you know, a sharp trend down, you know, a steady trend down each week. You know, his average depth of target, Jay, has gone from 12.5 to 10, 12.3 to 8.8 this last week down to 7.5. And, you know, even I think more important, you know, is if you look at the amount of yards coming off of deep passes. And when I say a deep pass, I'm talking about a pass at least 20 yards or more. You know, Lamar Jackson, according to Pro Football Focus, you know, is now sitting at, so week one, 155 yards through, you know, over 20 yards or more. Then it went to 69 yards, then 79 yards. And the last 2 weeks, Jay, 0 and 0. So what, you know, we talked a little bit about, could this passing attack, you know, be stopped? You talked a little bit about from a coaching perspective of, you know, some of the ways they put you into a dilemma with what they can do with Lamar's legs, plus the running game. And then, you know, the stuff, you know, that they're doing deep down the middle portions of the field with Marquise Brown and Mark Andrews. So what's going on? You know, was it more just that, you know, we had a team that got off to a really hot start because they played some bad teams early? Or do we have teams that are now adjusting to what the Ravens are doing?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. You know, they started off the season against Miami and Arizona, who, you know, are not the two greatest pass defenses, especially Miami. You know, we talked about at length on one of our earlier pods. They were taking their deep middle safety out of the middle of the field quite often, you know, either using him as a spy or having him come up aggressively in run support. And as a result, Jackson was hitting several deep passes down the middle, which, you know, you actually have charted all of his plays and found that he's much more accurate on those types of throws. And that's consistent with what I've seen from him as well. And I think as the season's gone along, one, the Ravens have played against better defenses the last couple weeks in the Steelers and the week before that, the Browns. And teams have also been playing aggressively their pass defense towards the middle of the field, either using, you know, two high safety looks where you have two safeties sort of playing up the seams, or single high, you know, cover three type looks where the linebackers are carrying the seam routes vertically rather than being quick out to the flat, and, you know, often pattern matching more than just spot dropping on those drops. So, you know, rather than the linebacker just running straight out to the flat, if the guy in front of him is going vertical, he's sticking with it. And especially last week, you saw that with the middle of the field jumped up, Lamar Jackson really had trouble reading the field, you know, was late on a lot of reads, and then a couple times tried to force it over the middle, one on a pass to Mark Andrews. There was, you know, there were three Steelers around. The pass got tipped, bounced off his hands as well, and then went for an interception. Later in the game, Lamar Jackson, you know, adjusted to this defensive approach and was trying to attack the flats more than he was earlier in the game. But then there was a play where he had a two-level read, you know, a deep out and a flat route. and he read the flat defender correctly, who had come up on the running back, Mark Ingram, to defend the flat. But just his pass, you know, you mentioned outside the numbers, the accuracy. His pass was off target. He threw it, you know, outside and behind the wide receiver, which is really right into where the linebacker was dropping, or the defender was dropping. I don't think it was actually a linebacker, for, you know, a second interception. So really, when you have a quarterback who, you know, has trouble attacking the perimeter, the outside, you know, outside the numbers, it's really difficult because defenses can take away the middle of the field relatively easy with safeties, linebackers, and they can still, you know, have a lot of men in the box to defend the run game. So the Ravens are sort of built around the run game and then, you know, deep passing down the middle, and defenses have adjusted. So Lamar Jackson is going to have to get better at attacking the outside of the field for these things to really improve.
So is it something, you know, I mean, if we look at, you know, what's happened through the first several weeks, you know, Lamar Jackson squarely, right, a quarterback one. What are your thoughts on Lamar Jackson for the rest of the season? Do you think it's something, you know, that he's going to be able to overcome? Or do you see it being, you know, something that's probably we're going to get more of what we've seen here more recently versus what we saw the first few weeks, you know, and over the past 2 weeks, we've seen passing performances of 247 and 160 yards, you know, which is something that we talked about on the previous podcast, or I might have been 2 times ago, you know, after, I think it was 2 times ago because it was after his 2 huge week ones, you know, whenever we looked back, you know, to, you know, the season, you know, before, and we saw basically he didn't have any games that were anywhere near any of these, you know, and we were kind of wondering, were these going to be outliers? But what's your rest of the season take, you know, on Lamar Jackson?
I mean, I think that he's still, you know, a quarterback that you have to start routinely because of his rushing upside. He's going to get a lot of rushing yards. He'll run in some rushing touchdowns. But in terms of the passing productivity, I don't think that it's likely he will, you know, get back to the heights we saw early in the season. He has some flaws as a passer. You know, we already talked about his issues with accuracy outside the numbers. You know, he also showed some issues with accuracy this past week on, you know, short intermediate passes between the hashes, where it's not that they're wildly inaccurate, but just not quite as pinpoint as you would like. If there's a slant by Marquise Brown where he wins with an inside release in the red zone, and Lamar just puts it a little bit behind him just enough for the defender to get back in, get a hand in there, and it's an incomplete pass. But then the other issue is that I think in the NFL, you really have to be able to attack the intermediate zones when teams are playing zone defense against you. And these teams, you know, I didn't mention this earlier when you asked about the approach. The past couple of weeks, they've been playing a lot of zone coverages, which really makes the quarterback make a read, make an on-time throw, often in tight windows. You know, we talk about anticipation, reading the defense, reading the leverage of your receiver. And there were a lot of plays where there were open windows for throws, and Lamar was just late getting through his progression, missed the open windows, and then either was sacked or, you know, had to scramble. And so he's still showing those flaws that were there last year. While, you know, over time, over his career, he should improve in these areas. You know, these aren't typically things that dramatically improve throughout the course of a single regular season. So I think his passing upside will be capped relative to what we saw earlier. But obviously, you know, the fantasy production as a runner will be there. The other concern I have with him, and maybe you have some insight on this, is the quality of their defensive opponents increases substantially through the rest of the season. You know, they don't have any Arizonas, Miamis, or Kansas Cities on the schedule really for the rest of the year. They're playing teams like, you know, the Bills, a really good defense. They play the Steelers again, who have improved dramatically since adding Minkah Fitzpatrick, far fewer coverage breakdowns. So I think the going will be a little tougher, but he's still, you know, a must start from a fantasy perspective.
Yeah, he'll get, you know, it's not crazy, you know, as far as the strength of schedule goes. But yeah, definitely, you know, he doesn't have another Arizona or Dolphins on the schedule. Unlike the Patriots, he doesn't get to play Miami twice and then also get to play the Jets twice. Anyway, another story. But
he does get to play the Patriots, though. Who
yes, you know, on week 9. which is
fantasy MVP so far this season.
Yeah, the MVP of all fantasy, the Patriots defense, folks. Yeah. So let's talk just real quickly before we move on to the Rams. Let's just talk a little bit about Marquise Brown and Mark Andrews, because they're the two guys that obviously the trickle down effect, you know, here. Now, Marquise Brown is dealing with an ankle injury, so we don't know if we're going to see him this weekend. It looks like he'll be a game time decision. But as far as rest of the season goes, you know, if we look at Marquise Brown right now, he's sitting right on the edge of, you know, still really being a wide receiver too. Now he's living off of, you know, a really big game, from the week against Miami, you know, where he just really tore everything up. Now Mark Andrews has been much more consistent. You know, he, you know, essentially is, you know, even though he's been dealing with his own injury, right, with a foot injury, you know, Mark Andrews, you know, if you look at his last few weeks fantasy points wise from a PPR standpoint, it's not as great. 5 points, 13 points, and 10 points. But if you look at his target share, you know, it's 14%, 24%, 25%, whereas Marquise Brown has cooled off a little bit more. It's been 16, 18, and 18. Now, last week, 18% isn't necessarily bad. He was only out there for 55% of the time so that Lamar Jackson dropped back to pass because of the ankle injury. You know, he didn't play a lot of the snaps. You know, what's interesting with Marquise Brown, Jay, is he's getting 28%, you know, of the end zone targets. And you talked about one of the ones last week where, you know, Lamar Jackson missed him. But that's the most on the team. He's got 5 targets in the end zone. Mark Andrews has got 2. But the thing that I've noticed the most with Marquise Brown, and it actually ties right back to what you were talking about with some of these deep over the middle passing shots being taken away, is his average depth of target, you know, has just plummeted. You know, it's gone from a 19 week 1 to week 10 to week 2. We saw a 10, then we saw a 30 on week 3. The last 2 weeks, a 6.8 and an 8.2. So not being used, you know, as much deep, which makes sense when we talked about, you know, Lamar Jackson's average depth of target going down last, you know, over the last couple of games. But what do you see with these two guys? You know, Jay, we've got Marquise Brown right now, who is, again, borderline wide receiver 2. To me, we need to get him healthy. He looks like a wide receiver 3 the rest of the way. You know, there was hope that he was going to be a wide receiver 2 with wide receiver upside. But, you know, he's kind of, you know, and it's, we kind of preached that it was going to be this boom bust kind of thing with him. So even though he would be a wide receiver 2, you're still going to have weeks where you'll be on the outside looking in. But I'm struggling to, you know, really define, you know, and clearly believe that, oh, he can be a wide receiver 2. To me, he looks more like a wide receiver 3, you know, at this point, with the potential to really hurt you any week, you know, and not give you much because of the struggles of Lamar Jackson. Andrews, I feel like, is a little more insulated. You know, he's in the top 6 tight ends right now, and I think he probably can stick that out as long as he remains healthy, you know, for the rest of the season. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, in regards to Marquise Brown, you know, I think the talent is there. The skill is there. He's a very polished receiver despite being a rookie. I am very concerned about his ankle injury, you know, potential injury to the foot that had surgery. You know, he had a major surgery this offseason. And I think, you know, we've seen with players like Sammy Watkins that those foot injuries really take a while to heal. And I would guess that this is going to be something that's bothering him as we go forward through the rest of the season. The issues with his depth of target, you know, it's not that he's not getting separation downfield, but the types of routes where he is getting separation are ones that are, you know, less down the middle, those outside the number throws. There were a few times last week where he was open down the field and, you know, either Lamar didn't see it or went away from it. When I watch him, I feel like Lamar Jackson is aware of his struggles throwing accurately outside the numbers, especially deeper down the field. And it looks like often he's not even really, you know, reading receivers who are in those areas because he missed a decent number of guys who, you know, had potential deep shots down the field against the Steelers. And, you know, it's against a defense that sort of asks you to attack that area to get them out of it. You know, a lot of too high cover 2 looks. You know, some cover 3 where the corner is, you know, coming down onto the seam players running vertically and really leaving the deep outside the number throws more open. So I think Marquise Brown will struggle to have those deep passing receptions like he had week 1. You know, I think that the floor is really low, and I don't see the ceiling being quite as high, especially when you start factoring the foot injury in. With Mark Andrews, I agree with your take that he's a little more insulated. He runs a lot of the seam routes, you know, hooks, curls over the middle. And those are really the routes that Lamar Jackson is prioritizing in his progressions. In fact, often he'll just look at Andrews and just throw it to him, whether he's open or not, as we saw in that interception where, you know, there were four guys around. And those routes, again, are really right in Lamar Jackson's wheelhouse of the types of passes that he likes to attempt. So I would think that he's going to have the volume. And, you know, Mark Andrews is a good player once he gets the ball in hands, the ball in his hands. He's great after the catch, really tough to tackle. Just a big body who, you know, plays the ball well, uses leverage well. So I think that, you know, top 5-6 tight end is where he'll stay through the year as long as he's healthy. You know, he's also been dealing with a nagging injury issue.
Right. Yeah, he fully practiced today, so it looks like he's a go. It looks like it'll be a game time decision on Hollywood Brown. You know, he wasn't able to practice again. So I wouldn't be surprised if he actually just doesn't go this weekend. And, you know, Brown has been on the injury report, you know, and they've been real careful with him, you know, he and Andrews, you know, and with practice participation all along. This is the first time, though, he's had a DNP all 3 days, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. So let's jump over to, you know, the Los Angeles Rams. So the Rams are an interesting, you know, team to look at, Jay, because in one way, I mean, they're still supporting fantasy owners, right? We've got Cooper Kupp going crazy. You know, in most formats, he's going to be, you know, a top three receiver in fantasy football right now. If you look at, you know, Robert Woods, that's been a little more inconsistent, but not terrible. You know, he's still inside the top 24 wide receivers in fantasy football. Now, Brandon Cooks is definitely lower, but we've got, you know, this last game where, you know, he got a concussion, had to leave the game. So that's part of it. But then we've also got Gerald Everett coming on, and then we've got Todd Gurley. So it's kind of an interesting, you know, situation. We've got some fantasy things that are going on. I'm not sure how consistent they can be, though, because one of the things that, you know, I've noticed, you know, with the Rams is even though their passing, you know, has gotten better this year, you know, when we look at, so like, last year, if you look at the number of games, Jay, that they had over 100 yards rushing, you know, by this point, you know, they already had three. This year, they've only got two, but they've got a 90-yarder, a 28-yard clunker, and then they've got an 82-yard game. But what's even more telling to me is the points. The points are what seem to be down the most. The Rams are getting yards. It isn't necessarily pretty. It's these, you know, they're getting behind teams now, and, you know, they're having to get into these shootouts. Whereas before, they were really asserting their dominance. If you look at last year, Jay, they scored 30 points or more on 12 out of 16 games. So far this year, they've hit the 30 point threshold twice. You know, week one against Carolina, and then in week four against Tampa Bay. Last week, they almost did, you know, against Seattle with 29 points. But the consistency just isn't quite there. This used to be a team that when I would watch them, I just thought, wow, other teams don't have answers. Now, when I watch this team, I feel like they're actually being forced to evolve and try to figure different things out because many defenses have actually figured out how to stop their offense. What are you seeing, you know, when it comes to, you know, the dominance of the Rams and the changes we're seeing them go through?
Yeah, a lot of good stuff to touch on here from a talent and also scheme, you know, offensive and defensive perspective. I think that, you know, the Super Bowl loser hangover is real because, one, if you're in the Super Bowl, teams are going to be studying you all offseason to try to stop what you're doing. And the Rams offense, you know, Sean McVay's offense was the big thing this offseason, with several head coaches getting jobs because they had ties to McVay. And so every defensive coordinator was studying ways to stop the offense. And the Patriots laid out a pretty good blueprint in the Super Bowl where, you know, their whole game plan was really built around taking away what the Rams wanted to do in the run game with the wide zone, and then also, you know, stopping the effect of jet motion and not really letting that affect their defensive approach. And teams this year, we've seen a lot of teams are playing, you know, these six-man fronts against the Rams, and that's really there to take away the wide zone, which is the staple play of their offense. And, you know, I think the effect of losing the Super Bowl is you lose a little bit of confidence, and it's really hard to recover from teams attacking you, you know, where you most don't want to be attacked, you know, your bread and butter plays. And so when you have that strategic component, that psychological component, I think often it adds up to struggles because, you know, even if teams try to take away what you do, if you can execute exquisitely, often you can still accomplish what you want to accomplish with the wide zone. And we see the Patriots do this, you know, consistently when we talk about their, you know, personnel trends, their obvious, you know, personnel groupings that lead to certain types of play calls, you know, specifically like with the fullback with James Devlin that we talked about a couple weeks ago. But they're able to often execute, and that, you know, surprise component is less important than the execution. But, you know, when you don't have that confidence, it's really hard to go all out and execute. And then in addition to, you know, those issues, Todd Gurley, you know, in my estimation, really hasn't been the same since his knee injury started flaring up, you know, towards the end of last season. Spent this offseason rehabbing. There was a lot of question marks about, you know, chronic arthritis, knee condition, et cetera. But when I watch him play, it's not that he is not explosive, but Todd Gurley really, when he was at his peak, was as explosive a runner as you would see. You know, he's big back, but really when he hit that acceleration button, he was just flying past linebackers, and he doesn't really seem to have that acceleration anymore. And I'm not sure that he's going to get it back, you know, based on the time frame from which we've seen this affecting him. And so when your scheme is hurt a little bit, you know, your best player is not 100%, then I think it's really difficult to establish the bread and butter of their offense. And typically when that happens, you know, you have to adapt and you do something you're a little less comfortable with, and it's really hard to reach the same levels that you've reached before.
And so real quick question, Jay. So like, say you're running, you know, wide zone, and that's your staple, like what we talk about with the Rams here. And now you're facing these six man fronts, right? Because teams are trying to take that away. A couple quick things. Can you just kind of let our listeners know? So how is the six man front from a football terms? How is that designed to take that play away? And then secondly, what's really the counter for an offense? How do you, if a team is going to play you that way, what should your counter be? Or what are some of the things maybe you're already seeing the Rams do to help try to get opposing defenses out of that look?
Yeah. So the problem with the six man front is, you know, you have your two outside linebackers or defensive ends lined up out wide at the tackle or tight end. And then you have four defensive linemen, you know, dispersed across the front between the tackles on both sides. And typically when you're running wide zone, you know, there's what we call a B-gap bubble, where you have your defensive end and then you have your defensive tackle who's, you know, head up inside shade on the guard. And so from the guard to outside the tackle or tight end, you have, you know, one gap, one and a half gaps in that B-gap where there's a soft spot. And that's really where your running back is aiming with his initial steps and then making some reads as he goes. When you have a six-man front, it really compresses that B gap bubble, often, you know, gets rid of a B gap bubble where you have a player in the B gap. And it just makes it harder to attack because, you know, everything is more compressed. Your reads for the running back are more compressed. He has to make a decision more quickly in terms of, you know, is he aiming outside? Is he cutting back? Is he just going to sort of wait it out and see if a crease develops? And then, you know, in terms of being able to adjust to that, the Rams have run a lot of one of their other staple run plays, which is duo, where you're really trying to get north-south run up. You know, you get the offensive lineman down blocking, find a seam, get upfield, because you have fewer second-level players when you have six men on the line of scrimmage. So if you can break through that initial line, you know, there's a chance for some chunk plays. And we've seen Todd Gurley break some longer runs. You know, he had a nice touchdown run when they were able to create a seam last week. And then also they've done a little bit more of a crack toss where you have a wide receiver come and, you know, crack back block on that last man on the line of scrimmage. And then if you don't have those second level, those off ball linebackers, there are fewer players there in pursuit if you can get outside of that last man on the line. And, you know, McVay has done some of this and they've had some offensive success, but I don't think they've quite gotten into that rhythm that they had when their bread and butter was sort of hitting on all cylinders last year and the year before that.
Yeah, a couple of quick notes on Gurley before, you know, we jump over to a couple of the other skill players here on this team. One is that his snap counts have gone from 73% to 75% and 93% over the last 3 weeks. Now, he is dealing with a quad injury this week. I haven't seen a practice report for today. So I believe he did not practice yesterday, but it was really more of a walkthrough because, you know, the Rams were dealing with some wind and stuff at their facility. So it wasn't, you know, we don't really have a true understanding of what Todd Gurley's participation would have been, you know, at that point. But, you know, assuming if he is returning to health, it is interesting to see that the Rams are using him more. He also has accounted for 58, 45, and then 83% of the team rushing attempts. Now, it's worth noting that the number of rushing attempts didn't necessarily go up. It's just they did not get the other guys involved as much last week. So I don't know what will happen going forward. Is this something where, as if there's more carries to go around, are they going to let Gurley have a little bit more, or are they still going to keep him on a pitch count? I'm not quite sure, but as the Rams continue, you know, Jay, to lose, like in week four, they fell down by 15 last week. It was a close game. They lose by 1 point. You know, it could be something where we see the Rams start to lean on Gurley a little bit more, because up until, you know, I think the Rams' approach going in was, we'll save Todd Gurley for when we need him. Well, they may need him sooner than they thought. Is kind of, you know, where my head's at. I don't know for sure what they're going to do, but there are some trends there I thought I would throw out for folks. You know, he also saw a season high 64% of routes ran per drop back this week by Jared Goff. So he was also more involved, you know, as far as running routes. And in the last 3 weeks, whereas in the first 2 weeks, Malcolm Brown was taking some of the rushing attempts inside the five, the last 3 weeks, all of them have gone to Todd Gurley. So his utilization trends are pointing up a little bit. To your point, Jay, you know, what I've seen when I've had the Rams on a lot and I've watched a lot of their games, you know, it does seem to me that, you know, there still is something missing, you know, with Gurley. But he looks like he could still be effective. I'm not sure, to your point, you know, can he ever get back to what we were used to seeing, you know, from Todd Gurley? But let's talk just real quickly. So another emerging trend here, you know, Jay, is tight end Gerald Everett. So now what we're seeing from the Rams, and it'd be interesting to get your thoughts on this as well, we're starting to see them run more 12 personnel. And so for those of you that don't know, so 12 personnel is actually whenever you're running two tight ends on the field at one time. And last week we saw Gerald Everett, here's the last 3 weeks, his snap counts have went from 88% to 56% to 81%. Now week three didn't really count because Tyler Higbee was out. But in week four, we saw Everett play 56% of the snaps and Higbee play 44%. And last week we saw 81% for Everett and 56% for Higbee. And they ran 12 quite a bit. As far as the routes per dropback, that's where Everett also has increased. He's at 62%, then 54%. And then last week was a season high of 72%. And we did see Brandon Cooks leave the game. So that could have been part of it, Jay. Maybe they just weren't going to use, you know, maybe they didn't want to use their 11 personnel package quite as much. But it's interesting to note, Josh Reynolds did run a route on 48% of the dropbacks by Jared Goff. And Brandon Cooks had been at 58%. So it's not like they just went completely away from 11. You know, they used Josh Reynolds plenty whenever Brandon Cooks went down. But I'm wondering, is there something to this? I mean, and I think for fantasy owners, I think the question here is, okay, great. One, what do I think about Gerald Everett in this offense? You know, because it is a year where, you know, there's only a few tight ends really doing anything, you know, and then we've got really, you know, a big gap staring at us. So one, is this something we see continuing for Gerald Everett? Is this a schematic thing that the Rams maybe are potentially doing to try to help offset some of the changes they're seeing from opposing defenses? And then lastly, what effect might this have on some of these other, you know, players? Can Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods and Brandon Cooks all continue to get theirs whenever now we potentially have another weapon, you know, in the mix?
Well, I think the teams have seen that if they can make Jared Goff, you know, question his progressions, question his process a little bit, that he struggles a little bit more, both with accuracy and then also, you know, taking sacks. And one way that I think Goff has adjusted to that is often, you know, and you'll see this with a lot of young quarterbacks, teams in the NFL, if you have three receivers on one side and one on the other, you know, it's often that the one receiver side will get man coverage. And so there were a decent number of plays last week where Gerald Everett was, you know, the one on the 3-by-1 formation. And it was just an easy read for Goff where he's getting man coverage. And so Goff, you know, rather than having to read through the confusion, you know, throws it to Everett. And so I think a lot of it will be sort of scheme dependent in terms of what they're seeing from the defense. Also, you know, the injury to Cooks, as you mentioned, probably led them to go with more 12 personnel rather than have Reynolds assume that full-time role. And then also, you know, we mentioned the struggles in the run game. One way they may be trying to address that is to run more 2 tight end sets, you know, have an extra blocker, extra skilled blocker in there. Because, you know, even when they don't have 2 tight ends, they're still running a lot of compressed formations. They have their receivers block a lot of, you know, box players, defensive linemen, linebackers. And so if you have a tight end in there, the blocking is typically a little more effective than if, you know, Robert Woods is trying to block the outside linebacker. But, you know, in terms of talent, I think that Kupp obviously, you know, has taken a leap. He was on the Adrian Peterson ACL rehab plan, apparently. You know, came back bigger, faster, stronger, better. And so he's really working his way into that elite tier of wide receivers. Robert Woods and Brandon Cooks are both very, very good receivers and, you know, guys that I would prioritize throwing the ball to, you know, assuming all else is equal over Gerald Everett. You know, you saw last week Everett had a ball bounce off his hands that led to, I think it led to an interception. My memory is a little hazy right now watching all this film.
But, yeah.
You know, he's not quite as reliable as those guys, though he has developed and he has gotten better as a receiver. And obviously he has earned Jared Goff's trust enough to where he'll have games where Goff has no trouble, you know, targeting him very frequently.
Well, what's interesting, Jay, is that last week was Cooper Kupp's lowest snap rate and lowest routes per dropback. He is actually, like, sitting here looking at this, he's the one that came off the field to get Gerald Everett on the field. He only played 66% of the snaps, where he had been at 98 and 96%. And then his routes ran per dropback dropped from 95 down to 84%. So by far, you know, 10% lower than what he had been used to. So it wasn't as much, you know, Josh Reynolds, you know, not being on the field. It was really, you know, Cooper Kupp gave up quite a bit of playing time, you know, to Gerald Everett. Now, Kupp still saw 33% of the targets, which was first on the team because he seems to be the guy that, to your point, you know, Goff trusts the most. Robert Woods was at 18%. Brandon Cooks was at 6%, where he had been at the week before. Brandon Cooks had been at 12%. The week before that, 32%. And then Gerald Everett had 20%. So it sounds like you would still prioritize those receivers. So it sounds like you're still, you know, good. Let's just really quickly, I guess, go ahead and hit on, I mean, you know, Cooper Kupp.
To summarize on Everett, you know, I think because of the way defenses are approaching them and the ways the Rams are trying to adjust, I think there will be weeks like this last week where he has really good games. But I think he also, you know, still has a low floor just based on the talent and the priority in their passing game. So sort of boom or bust, but, you know, the booms can be really nice, as we saw last week.
Yeah, my thoughts here are Everett is going to be, I agree with you that there's going to be some boom bust to his game. I do believe, though, if he continues to see this kind of run, which we'll get another data point this week, it's going to affect Cooper Kupp, Robert Woods, and Brandon Cooks. It has to. If they're going to now not just run, because the beauty of the Rams and why you could draft all three of these receivers at their ADP was because they run 11 personnel 90 to 95% of their plays. That means that those guys are always out there and they're always in the mix to get, you know, catches, whereas other teams that may run a lot of three wide receiver may only run at 70-80%, and it's much more game script dependent. You know, if it's a team that's way ahead, you may only see 11 personnel 50% of the time because they're going to heavy packages and they're trying to run the ball. The Rams never did that. They did all of their running from 11 to make everything look the same, and they always kept those receivers on the field. And now we're seeing for the first time a potential shift away from that. And this was in a game where they weren't winning, you know, they weren't way up, you know, on an opponent. You know, this was a back and forth game last week versus Seattle. You know, that came down to a 1-point loss. So it was highly competitive, and yet we still saw Gerald Everett more. So I do think that it has a potential that on those weeks that Everett does boom, It's going to come from, it has to come from somewhere, and it's going to either be Cup, Woods, or Cooks. So one of those guys is going to be the odd man looking out each week if Gerald Everett now becomes the fourth guy. Whereas before, you could kind of count on all three. You were still going to have some weeks that one of them would blow up and the others would just be okay, but you didn't have to worry about the complete bust weeks. And I think now that's in the potential range of outcomes for the Rams receivers.
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said.
Cool. So just real quick to put a wrap on it, you know, what are your thoughts on Todd Gurley right now? You know, you've got, you know, a running back that's just, he's sitting still in the RB2 range for fantasy owners, Jay. You know, how do you see him finishing out this season? Is it something where, you know, do you think he's a great, you know, just go ahead and, you know, sell now? Is he a hold? Is he a buy? Where's your head at on Todd Gurley?
You know, I think that he's, as you said, he's still a functional player. He's still a good running back. He's just not quite elite in terms of his talent level at this point. What I would like to see is Daryl Henderson work in a little bit, you know, maybe even with Gurley on the field to try to get another dynamic player in space, especially against those six-man fronts. But, you know, Gurley's volume is going to be there. They've moved away from Malcolm Brown, you know, really in terms of the committee. We haven't seen that since really week one. You know, I do expect McVay to figure some of this out. And when they're in the red zone, he's getting all the carries. So for me, you know, I expect him to produce in terms of as sort of a, you know, middle RB1 range, but, you know, pretty consistently in the running back one territory.
Okay. Well, that'll be, you know, and that'll be an improvement. I mean, a lot of that's due to these last 2 weeks. He's really shot up. He's in a PPR format. He scored 11, 16, 4, 26, and 21. You know, the Rams aren't scoring as much, but they are scoring enough. And right now that is keeping Todd Gurley in that, you know, high RB2, you know, low RB1 mix. You know, I like what I'm seeing on the utilization trends. So I think Todd Gurley, you know, is a hold right now, you know, for me as well. All right, Jay. So now let's talk about another offense that maybe we didn't have as high expectations as we did, you know, the Rams. But it's definitely an offense that we thought would be, or at least I thought would be better than it is. And that's the Atlanta Falcons. You know, if we take a look at the Falcons, you know, they're a team that, you know, it's not that, you know, they're not supporting any fantasy points. It's just not honestly in the way that I thought they would. I just thought that this would be a team that would be more competitive, you know, and if we look at, you know, the way that the Falcons game scripts are playing out right now, it's just, they play from behind all the time. The last three games, Jay, margin of victory, -3, -14, and -21. So they're throwing the ball on, or they're dropping back to pass 74% of their snaps. So that's super high. That's higher than the Cardinals, to put it in perspective. The Cardinals are at 68%. You've got the Bengals at 71%. You know, you've got the Rams, who we just talked about, at 68%. You've got the Dolphins at 72%. So this is a team that things just haven't quite worked out, you know, the way we thought. And one of the guys I think that it's hurting the most, at least for me, is Devonta Freeman. Devonta Freeman is a running back that, you know, I was excited about getting in the third round of the draft because I thought that this could be a good, you know, offense. And I thought that with, you know, Tevin Coleman gone, that there was going to be an opportunity here for, you know, Freeman to really, you know, handle the bulk of the workload. And that just hasn't happened either. You know, his fantasy points have picked up over the last few weeks. We've seen 13 points, 18 points, 18 points. That's in a PPR setup. But if you look at his snaps, Jay, at that same time, they've gone down from 90 to 62 to 55%. His rushing attempts, you know, as a percentage of the team, have gone from 80 to 71% to 55%. He's now averaging 64% on the year. And inside the five is the real killer. He's only got one attempt on the year inside the five. Ito Smith has the other four. So Ito Smith is at 67% of the rushing attempts of the rushing attempts for the team inside the five, whereas Devonta Freeman is only at 17%. You know, routes per dropback also dropping, you know, from 82 to 47 to 39%. Now, those big numbers that I've mentioned at the beginning of each one of these lists, those are the weeks that Ito Smith, you know, had the concussion, had to leave the game early. But essentially what we're seeing here is, you know, this is about 60% Devonta Freeman's backfield and about 40% Ito Smith's. And that's a problem. You know, Jay, if you're playing in an offense that's just trailing all the time, you're not getting ahead. You know, you're not sticking with the run as long, and you've got a back that's sharing time on passing downs with another back. And, you know, they're just not in the red zone often. And when they are, Freeman's not out there. What are your thoughts on Devontae Freeman and the Falcons running game?
So when I watch Devontae Freeman, you know, from a talent perspective, I think that he's a very similar player to what we've seen in the past. It's not that he's, you know, gone off a hill in terms of his physical performance. He's still very quick, great agility. He's always had excellent vision and balance. The problems that I see are you know, related to a lot of the utilization trends, you know, the game scripts that we've seen. And then also just the transition to Dirk Koetter as our offensive coordinator. When you look at, you know, the Buccaneers and what they did last year, their running game under Koetter was really an afterthought. And, you know, both from a design perspective and then also, you know, when they utilize the running game, how they utilize the running game, it's not a primary component of their offense. And they're, you know, often looking to pass really to set up the run. And so, you know, as much as the game script have led to that high passing percentage, I think also that's just who, you know, Koetter has shown himself to be. And really when you don't focus on the running game, you know, it's something that takes so much coordination between the offensive line, the running backs, that you tend to struggle. You have missed assignments. You just, you know, aren't getting the holes that you're used to seeing, especially, you know, a couple of years ago or a few years ago now when Kyle Shanahan was there and their running game was really, you know, at its peak and their offense was really at its peak. Because when you have that balance, you know, there's less pressure on the quarterback in terms of the pass rush because the defensive ends can't just fly upfield. You know, just having that lack of predictability facilitates production. And so being one-dimensional, Ryan's dealing with more pressure. And, you know, it really hurts Devontae Freeman from a fantasy perspective that they're, you know, not really, they haven't, and I don't think they're going to put in the energy to really developing the running game like the Falcons have in the past. You know, luckily Freeman is a pretty good receiver, and, you know, in these recent weeks, he's really bolstered his fantasy production with receptions and yards to the air. And so, you know, he still should have some life, but, you know, I was with you in being really high on him as a third round pick in fantasy drafts this year. And I don't think he, even, you know, with the receiving output, is going to justify that selection. So,
yeah, for me, my thought process right now on Freeman is honestly to sell. It's not sell high, really, I guess, because, you know, he probably hasn't had a ceiling week, but he's also, I think, you know, he very easily these last 2 weeks where he scored 18 and 18 in a PPR format, you know, he's been very close to just being, you know, worth 10 points. And I, you know, so my thought process right now is those two 18s back to back might look really good to a fellow owner in a league where maybe I can go get, you know, some receiver help or something else that I need. I'm at the point where, you know, the Falcons, I kind of think they just are who they are. I don't see a way how they're going to really improve enough to make this running game more viable. Are you on that same page, or do you think he's more of a guy that, you know, you would advise folks to hold or maybe even a buy?
I'm on the same page. You know, I think you could probably guess from my answer to the previous question. I don't think that, you know, I don't see it turning around. The Falcons defense has really been very poor this year. You know, difficult fixes, scheme breakdowns, talent, you know, the whole schematic approach. So I don't see the game scripts changing much. I don't see their offensive philosophy changing very much. So I think Freeman is at this point who he's been this year. And I don't see the red zone opportunity changing very much. So, you know, selling at a medium high may be the best value you can get for him.
Well, here's the thing. Freeman isn't the only guy that they aren't just, you know, committing to. You know, if you look at the way they're handling their receivers, this is what's mind-blowing to me, Jay. Julio Jones is playing 75% of the snaps. He's running routes on right around 80% of the dropbacks. This last week, 78% in a game. You know, now some of that may have been resting him at the end and the blowout, but I mean, how do you have a receiver like Julio Jones? You know, if I get it, you know, you get, maybe he's not out there for 100% of your passing plays. You know, they are running quite a few plays because they play from behind so much. But I just don't get any scenario how one out of five passes that Matt Ryan drops back to throw that Julio Jones is not one of your options. And so routes per drop back on the season, Julio's at an 83%. Calvin Ridley's at an 82%. Mohamed Sanu is leading the team at 88%. Austin Hooper's at 80%. And I mean, they're really spreading it across all of these guys. I mean, Julio Jones' target share is only 19% on the season. You've got Austin Hooper at 18%, and you've got Calvin Ridley at 14% and Mohamed Sanu at 16%. So they're really spreading the ball around, and they're even they're getting Justin Hardy and Russell Gage. Those guys are getting on the field for 15 to 14% of the routes ran per dropback. So they're using those guys to give relief to Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley. I don't understand. Like, help me understand. Like, from a coach perspective, like. How does that ever make sense?
Well, you know, there are different philosophies. I it's not a philosophy I ascribe to in terms of, you know, featuring your talented players. A guy, you know, a coach like Sean Payton, who is a very good offensive coach, has had a lot of success through the years, really makes it a point of getting the ball to his best players, you know, Michael Thomas, Alvin Kamara, and featuring them in ways that, you know, magnifies their strengths, put your players in a position to succeed. The Falcons offense and Cutter's offense is really designed for the quarterback, and, you know, it's a quarterback-centric offense. And so the receivers aren't necessarily your playmakers as much as they are receivers in the route tree, receivers in the progression. And, you know, they do a little bit of this in terms of trying to get Julio Jones specific plays, but often, you know, he's out there running a route in the progression, and it's whether Matt Ryan's read will take him to Julio Jones or not. It doesn't seem to me that they're consistently working to feature Julio Jones in the passing game. And, you know, you saw some of this last year with the Buccaneers where, you know, obviously Mike Evans was the featured guy and he had quite a bit of volume, but you have guys that this year are really producing, you know, wide receiver one type numbers, you know, Chris Godwin specifically. And he really was, you know, a minor part of their offense last year, just one of many faces on the team. And I think we're seeing similar things with the Falcons where, you know, it could be any guy any week that really, you know, based on what the defense is running, it leads Matt Ryan to target that guy heavily. Last week it was Mohamed Sanu, and he had a, you know, a good game. But I don't think Julio is going to be that consistent week to week.
I would think with a guy like Julio Jones that's played with Matt Ryan for this long, it seems like Matt Ryan would just trumpet himself. It seems like it would be his nature to just be like, I'm going to Julio Jones on this play.
Yeah, well, you know, the first play of the game last week for the Falcons, they come out, they run an RPO with Julio Jones running a slant. Austin Hooper is running a swing, you know, from tight end to the left side. And there's no, you know, the defense is blitzing, so there's no linebacker there underneath the slant. And so Ryan pulls it, he passes, but instead of throwing it to Julio Jones, who comes wide open on the slant, potentially for what could have been a big play, you know, he throws a swing pass to Hooper, who then gets tackled for a 3-yard gain by the corner. And I agree with you, it's sort of perplexing when you have a guy, a talent like Julio Jones, you know, has some limitations to his game, but is also just ultra elite in certain components of his game. And that's a guy that I would really be trying to get the ball, you know, underneath in open space, let him run after the catch, because really it's a dynamic component to the offense. And, you know, I think Atlanta's troubles really are rooted in, you know, the head coaching performance through this year. And I don't see it being a staff that's really going to hang around for that long, you know, whether it's midseason or, you know, after the season. I think they'll have a new coaching staff in there sooner rather than later. But it definitely puts a damper on most of the guys in their offense for me.
Yeah, so right now, I mean, let's just do a quick, you know, little game here. Rest of the season, you know, is Julio Jones, you know, a top six wide receiver like what we've been used to?
No, I don't think I would put him in there. You know, I think he's low-end wide receiver one, maybe high-end wide receiver two even.
Okay. How about Calvin Ridley? We drafted him thinking a wide receiver two or a wide receiver three. probably similar, you know, thoughts on that. I mean, yeah, he's probably not. Yeah, he's wide receiver three, but he's going to have his weeks where you wish he wasn't in your lineup.
Yeah, I mean, I think teams are going to invite the Falcons to go to, you know, players like Sanu, players like Hooper, because they're just a little less dynamic than Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley. And I think that's why, you know, Austin Hooper has had so much volume this year. And it's why Mohamed Sanu had a big game last week, because defenses are sort of inviting that, saying, you know, we'll let these guys chip away at us underneath. We're not going to give up the big plays to Ridley, the big plays to Julio Jones.
Well, you're correct on that. Last week, the average depth of target to Julio was set 15.7, Calvin Ridley 15.9. The two guys that got, you know, the ball more, you had Mohamed Sanu. Well, last week, Ridley out-targeted Sanu, but last week, Sanu was at a 3.6. Hooper was at a 6.8. But even, you know, big picture, right, on the season, you know, Mohamed Sanu's at a 7.4, and Austin Hooper is an average depth of target of 7, where Julio's a 13 and Calvin Ridley's a 15. So the further you get down the field, the lower the target share on this team. There's a direct correlation. Jay, I think you hit that one on the head. So, yeah, to me, these all sound like guys that, including Julio, that if you can sell high, that you would probably, you know, that you would say, hey, go ahead, do it.
Yeah, I mean, the two guys that I think would have more value than they had before the season would be those two guys, Hooper and Sanu. You know, Hooper as a tight end one and Sanu as a guy that, you know, has some fantasy value, whereas going into the season, you probably had him, you know, on the waiver wire.
Yeah, on my other podcast this week, you know, the Fantasy Football Hustle, you know, I told folks, look, I was holding on Julio Jones. You know, if you can buy him, buy him. But I'm going to have to think about it some more. You know, listening to you describe this offense, I mean, it matches what the data says, which is, you know, an offense where, you know, it's not really designed to go to any one player. You know, it's really being spread around. So we have a few minutes here. So let's jump into some other players, Jay. You know, let's just talk through them quickly. Is this something where we see their situation? You know, some of these guys may be overperforming our expectations. Some may be underperforming. I'm actually going to start with an underperformer here, since we just talked about an offense that seems, you know, fine, just spreading the ball around. There's another similar one, you know, to that in the passing game anyway, not in the running game, but that's the Carolina Panthers. And there's a guy here that, you know, Jay, you got me super excited about this preseason, you know, and I really love me some Curtis Samuel. But man, it's just not happening for the guy. You know, I think he's like wide receiver 50 or something like that right now in PPR formats. You know, for folks that are into the utilization thing, things are good. You know, his snaps are, you know, the highest on the team at receiver. His routes ran per drop back are highest on the team at receiver outside, even better than DJ Moore on the season. And his targets, you know, he's had 27%, 21%, and 20% of the targets each of the last, you know, so over the last 3 weeks, he's at 20% for the season. DJ Moore's at 21%. Greg Olson's going down a smidge. He's at 17%. And then McCaffrey's at 20%. So you got four guys sitting right around 20%. But the problem for Curtis Samuel is it just hasn't happened yet, Jay. His big game hasn't happened. They've targeted him on 67% of the end zone throws, which isn't many. They've only had 3 throws into the end zone, which is like, that's really low. You know, he's leading the team in air yards at 36%. Average depth of target is biggest on the team. It's at 14.9. Yet the guy, you know, we just haven't had, you know, a week that we can feel really good about in our fantasy box scores. What are your thoughts on Curtis Samuel? Is this a buy? Is this a, hey, just, you know, if you're in a shallow league, you got to just go ahead and give up and move on? You know, where's your head at?
Well, you know, the quarterback change, I don't know if it was necessarily unanticipated, but obviously that threw a wrench into the idea. Obviously, you know, if you have a healthy and, you know, functional Cam Newton, that's the ideal situation for Curtis Samuel. And Kyle Allen has stepped in admirably, especially when you look at the win-loss column, which is really important for, you know, NFL football. But I think they've really shifted away from an offense that features, you know, spread passing attack to an offense that is built around Christian McCaffrey. And, you know, he is the guy who's getting all the volume. And, you know, Curtis Samuel is often running a lot of routes that are clearing out coverage. He often gets extra attention, you know, extra safety attention over the top. And you'll see a lot of those deeper throws. There are, you know, a couple defenders in the area when the ball's arriving. And then additionally, he's had a lot of close misses. you know, an not normal number of close misses that I've seen watching him. When you talk about that Bucs game, you know, he was open all game down the field, and that was really when Cam Newton, whether it was his foot or his shoulder, really had a tough game with anything downfield, and, you know, was underthrowing Samuel or, you know, not even getting the ball close to him. And then, you know, Kyle Allen just hasn't been able to generate those types of, you know, downfield targets consistently since teams have been able to, you know, adjust.
And if you remember, that was the game, that was the one game where the opposing team took McCaffrey away. McCaffrey did nothing that week against the Bucs. They really, you know, focused on him. You know, I believe that was week two, right? Because that was the last week that Cam Newton played. You know, if you look at, 7 points for McCaffrey, you know, the almighty who scored 43, 28, 34, and 48 in his other games. He only had 7 points that week. So I guess just real quick on this, Jay, is there a chance that, you know, I don't, you know, when I think about taking away a guy like McCaffrey, it seems like that's what it's going to take to really try to get Curtis Samuel more opportunities. And then there's also, you know, him just being able to, the law of averages say some of these things that just haven't gone his way eventually will, because he is involved. You know, he's involved enough. You know, the team's running 62 plays a game. That's pretty good. So even at 20% target share, you know, I think that that's decent enough for a big play guy like Curtis Samuel. I don't think it's enough for a guy that's working underneath like DJ Moore, though. But I guess my quick question to you is, you know, is this something where we could see teams really focus more on taking away Christian McCaffrey, and we see more games, and maybe we see that game again, like what we saw with the Bucs, but we see Curtis Samuel actually, you know, able to convert those opportunities based on having, you know, potentially, you know, Kyle Allen, you know, as a healthy quarterback and able to deliver the ball.
I mean, if I was playing the Panthers, I would design my game plan around loading up in the box and stopping Christian McCaffrey. You know, you saw that 83 or 85 yard touchdown run he had last week where, you know, they're down one or two men in the box. He makes one cut and there's just no one there on the Jaguars. And so he's, you know, gone for an 85 yard touchdown. And really, you know, that's what the Panthers are trying to do, is get the ball into his hands as frequently as possible. So hopefully, you know, other defensive coordinators start taking that approach as the Panthers keep winning these games. And Curtis Samuel has a little more room to operate one-on-one rather than always having, you know, safety help over the top. Because I do still think that the talent is there. And, you know, I've seen the separation when he has balls that are catchable. He's really still excellent at the catch point. So I do think there's hope. But, you know, it's sort of in a wait-and-see pattern with him. So,
well, here's a quick tidbit. For folks. The Bucs stack the box 22% of the time they play the Panthers this week. That's one of the top. Now, some of that's dictated by offense, but that's definitely top five or six in the league. So they've shown a willingness to do it, and they are the team that has shut down McCaffrey one game so far. They also play a ton, Jay, of man coverage. They play man coverage on 48.9%. You know, this is based on Sports Info Solutions, some of the great data that, you know, I've been able to get from them. That's one of the top six man percentage coverages in the league. And the guy that the Panthers like to go to in man coverage, now it's not like a huge lead, like, you know, some teams clearly just go to one guy in man. But Curtis Samuel does lead, you know, the Panthers in man coverage, you know, target percentage at 23%. So maybe this is the week for Curtis Samuel. Maybe the Bucs come out there and load up to stop McCaffrey again. And Curtis Samuel's going to be getting those man coverage looks, you know, but he's actually going to have a quarterback that might be able to get it there because Cam was so hurt the last time we saw these two teams match up.
Yeah, we'll see if he can repeat his performance from week two and actually capitalize on some of those opportunities.
All right, so here we go. Rapid fire on a few of these. So Chris Godwin, he's the number one wide receiver in fantasy. Jay, is he a guy that you see continuing the year as a wide receiver one, potentially even in the top six?
Yeah, I think the talent is there. The scheme is there. Bruce Arians, you know, warned us all offseason that he'd be in the Larry Fitzgerald slot role. That's what we've seen. Mike Evans is still a great receiver, demands a lot of attention. And so, you know, defenses are focusing on Evans. Godwin has both the featured role in the offense and also the talent to capitalize. He's, you know, really, really excellent at the catch point. You'll see him make some tough contested catches, you know, catches where he's getting hit. And this year he's really improved his route running, specifically, you know, his work in the stems in terms of manipulating the leverage of defenders, getting more separation. So really Evans and Godwin, I mean, it's, you know, one of the best 1-2 punches at receiver in the NFL, and it's sort of pick your poison for these defenses. And I think a lot of teams are going to keep picking Evans just because he's so well-established as an all-pro type player. And so I think Godwin will continue to have those big games.
Yeah, Godwin is also the guy that they're going to against zone coverage. You know, if you look at the Panthers, they run the second most zone coverage in all of the NFL. So too bad that this game is not on the main slate this weekend for DFS. You guys have to wake up early to watch this one. But yeah, I'm with you. I think Chris Godwin finishes as a wide receiver one. And if you've got a league mate that's doubting that for some bizarre reason and they own him, you know, you should definitely snatch him up. But he's not a guy I would be giving away if I own, anticipating him going down. And now let's talk about another guy that's kind of, you know, we've discussed this receiver a couple times, Jay, and he just keeps on doing this. DJ Chark. You know, he's right in the top wide, he's in the top six wide receivers. This is insane. You know, how this guy keeps doing this, and he and Minshew are clearly on the same page. You know, Minshew had his biggest game, you know, this last week passing the ball. What are you seeing with DJ Chark? Is this a guy that we see continue on as a wide receiver one, or do you see a fall coming?
Well, what's interesting to me is, you know, the past couple of weeks, there were rumors that their opponents would be shadowing DJ Chark with their best corners, both Denver with Chris Harris and Carolina with James Bradbury. Neither of those teams chose to shadow Chark. In fact, when I watched the Jaguars, defenses aren't giving him any extra attention whatsoever. They're playing the Jaguars offense pretty straight up. The biggest focus is on stopping Leonard Fournette, who's really the focal point of that offense in the run game and then also often in the passing game. But what DJ Chark has done is, you know, he's very fast. He's big. This year, he's really improved his ball tracking and his contested catch ability. He's made some really outstanding catches, a bunch of back shoulder fades. You know, he's really improved at his back shoulder fade. And Minshew is really excellent at throwing that pass. He's thrown a lot of dimes on those back shoulder passes, and it's, you know, really paying dividends for Chark. And so the question for me is really, will defenses start playing DJ Chark like an NFL number one wide receiver in terms of shadowing him with the premier corner or giving extra attention over the top? You know, you look at Chark this week, past week, he had 2 touchdowns. The first one came on play action against man coverage where he's just running a deep, you know, like a deep crossing route, beats the corner off play action. There's no safety help over the top. Minshew throws perfect pass, you know, catches it, runs in for the touchdown. The second one, he's running, you know, corner route, a smash route against the standard cover two zone, and the corner sits in the flat on the flat route rather than, you know, fading into the hole, and he's wide open for another touchdown. So if defenses keep approaching them the same way, you know, he has the talent to capitalize on those opportunities when he's there. I am concerned that if he does start getting shadowed or teams start playing him with press coverage, I haven't seen him consistently be able to win against press in terms of getting separation. You know, he has had those contested catches that he's made, but those are tough to make an earning on, you know, consistently in the NFL.
Well,
if teams start giving him extra attention, he won't be able to overcome that extra attention easily.
Well, he gets the Saints this weekend, and in 3 out of 5 weeks so far, the Saints have had Lattimore actually shadow. So we'll see if the Saints continue to ignore Chark. But man, that's a tricky one because, I mean,
yeah, I think it's a really interesting matchup because Lattimore often does shadow, and so I want to.
And he shut down some really good receivers. I mean, he's the only guy this year that's held down Amari Cooper. We saw what Amari Cooper did to Jaire Alexander. I mean, that was like a man versus a kid.
Yeah, Lattimore can be inconsistent at times, but he has that elite ability. He'll have those special games, and so I want to see if they shadow him, and then if they shadow him, I want to see what Chark can do. It'll be a really interesting game.
If you own Chark on any teams, are you going to risk that this week? Or are you trying to find a way to put him on the bench? I feel like Lattimore is the kind of guy that will absolutely just destroy DJ Chark.
I do too, but at this point, I mean, I'm willing to bet on, you know, the chance that either the Saints don't shadow him, or, you know, I mean, it's really hard to bench DJ Chark. He's, like you said, the sixth highest receiver. So,
dude, listen to this.
I don't have him on any of my teams, but if he was, I'd have a hard time benching him.
That's great, being honest. Yeah, I don't have him because I thought he sucked. No. listen to this, though, just real quick. He's got, if you know, as far as yards and stuff, people know, you know, that information. But, you know, his red zone targets, Jay, 13. That's Keenan Allen's got 14. Cooper Kupp's got 13. Chris Godwin's got 12. Allen Robinson's got, or Mike Evans has got 12. I mean, he's up there with those guys. If you look at his end zone targets, he's got 5. That's more than any other receiver in the top 12 besides Mike Evans, who matches him at 5. So, I mean, he's getting deep targets. He's getting, you know, end zone targets. He's getting red zone looks. I mean, this guy's getting high leverage, you know, opportunities. These aren't, you know, just, oh, between the 20s kind of stuff. They're using him all over the field. So, I mean, I'm with you. I feel like this is, if Lattimore shadows him, I think it's ball game. I don't think he can beat Lattimore, but I'm with you. If for some reason, you know, the Saints don't decide to shadow him, DJ Chark's probably going to have another big week. Just real quick on rest of the season, is DJ Chark, you know, a guy that you would be willing to, you think it's a sell high moment, or do you think, you know, he settles in, you know, as like a wide receiver too?
I'd be very interested in seeing what I could get for DJ Chark, because I think that if teams do start approaching him like a number one, that there's a potential for a significant drop off in his production. Because I don't think the Jaguars will necessarily force him targets. You know, we've talked about this with Julio Jones. On the other hand, we talked about it with Michael Thomas. Based on their passing game, he seems to be a guy that is, you know, running routes in the progression, sort of interchangeably with D.D. Westbrook as the primary target. So I don't think they'll force it to him. And then I really questioned his ability to win consistently if he's facing those elite corners on a down-by-down basis. Or, you know, even getting safety help on a down-by-down basis. So I try to sell him, especially if you can get something really valuable in return, which you might, because he's producing like a, you know, top wide receiver.
I agree. I'm completely in the sell mode for DJ Chark. I still am concerned. I like Minshew, but I still have my own concerns about Minshew. I still have my concerns about this offense overall. You know, Chark still, and I like what Chark's doing, you know. So, I mean, it's not like you just got to try to give him away. But if I could get something nice for him, I definitely would do it. So that's going to be it for us this week, Jay. Unless, is there one last guy or anybody that you're just wanting to quickly, you know, hit on, or are we good?
No, I think that we've covered a lot of great stuff. You know, don't want to keep these listeners hanging on too long.
So yeah, I know there's always more we want to cover. I feel like we don't always get to what we want to, but you know, we'll do it again in 2 weeks.
Four-hour podcast.
Yeah, we could do it for a week. We could do one, and we probably still wouldn't get to everything. We have so much we want to talk about. But, you know, we appreciate everybody for listening. We appreciate Matt for having us, you know, on the RSP, allowing us to use this platform. You know, if you guys haven't subscribed to the RSP, you need to do so. If you guys aren't following Jay, you got to go do that. Why are you not following Jay? How can you not be following Jay? So at Jay Moyer FB on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter at Dwayne, D-W-A-I-N, McFarland. You can also find my work at Establish the Run and at Football Guys, as well as, of course, the RSP. So we'll catch you guys again here in 2 weeks, and good luck in your fantasy leagues, unless you're playing me. See ya.